Okay, thank you, Council. Again, on behalf of the panel, we thank you for being willing to participate in what is still unusual, despite these unusual times. And we're grateful to be able to have this morning to have a conversation with you about this case. We'll try to, we're watching the time. We hope you will too. But we're also anxious to hear your arguments and answers to our questions. So with that in mind, I'll turn it over to Council for the petitioner.
Good morning, Your Honors. Alicia Nike, pro bono counsel on behalf of petitioner. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
That'll be granted.
May it please the court. It cannot be that petitioner can be ordered removed from the country for failure to show up for his removal proceedings when there is no evidence in the record that he ever knew where or when to go. When he never had a hearing to explain why he didn't show up, and when there is evidence in the record that he never received notice of his proceedings.
Are you able to help us understand why there are two notices to appear, one that appears to lack a location, even to where to send a change of address, and another one that has a location on it?
I don't know why there are two notices to appear in the record, Your Honor, and part of that is because DHS is the one that filed that second annotated copy. The copy that petitioner filed in this case was an exhibit to the BIA appeal brief, and that was the copy that he had. The only time that the annotated notice to appear is in the record is when DHS filed that copy. So I don't have an answer to that. But to your point, Your Honor, if you think that that is a question that needs to be answered, that's the exact type of question that could be answered at a hearing on the merits, which is the relief that we're seeking.
Can I just jump in there? It looks like the BIA already picked which one of those that it found persuasive, and it attached the one that it used as Exhibit 1. And Exhibit 1 looks to me, as I read the administrative record, to be the annotated one. So it seems that the BIA had both before it, and they selected the one that they titled Exhibit 1, which had an address on it. Isn't that governed by the substantial evidence standard?
That is, Your Honor, but the BIA, based on its decision, it doesn't seem like that's the copy they relied on, and that's because the BIA determined that written notice was not necessary in this case. And in coming to that conclusion, the BIA said it determined that petitioner failed to fulfill his obligation to update the immigration court with his new address when he moved from New Jersey to Virginia. And that goes to show that the BIA assumed that the petitioner ever knew the location of the immigration court. So the BIA can say that it relied on the blank notice to appear, but if the BIA's decision rests on the assumption that petitioner ever knew the Newark immigration court location, then it follows that the BIA actually relied on the annotated copy. And regardless, there's no evidence in the record that petitioner ever received that annotated copy. It is noteworthy, as Your Honors have pointed out, that what's written on the annotated copy is the location of the immigration court, which is the one detail that petitioner needed in order to fulfill his obligation to update the immigration court with his new address.
Let me just push back on that, because you say the only thing that petitioner needed is the address of the immigration court. And are you sure? Let me just say this, are you sure? Because on either version of the notice to appear, it says that, and I'm reading only an excerpt, you must notify the immigration court immediately by using a form EOIR-33 whenever your change of address or telephone number during the course of this proceeding. You will be provided a copy of this form. So it strikes me that if your client had a copy of the form, then that form oftentimes has the return address on it, and it doesn't matter if there was an address on the NTA or not. And it seems that the way that your client can avoid these service issues is to keep the updated address. And so I guess my question is, aren't there two ways? And did your client ever receive a form EOIR 33? If so, when? A lot of questions there. You can unpack as you want.
Thank you, Your Honor. So to your first question, there's no evidence in the record that petitioner ever received a copy of this EOIR 33. And I agree with you that the language on both the blank and the annotated copy of the notice to appear says that he will be provided with a copy of this form, but that's nowhere in the record. To your second question, respectfully, I disagree that he could have just figured it out. If you go on the website to find where an EOIR 33 is, it's not just a blank form that you fill out with an address. The forms are actually pre-populated by court. So petitioner would actually had to have known first the immigration court location so that he would have known which form to click on the website.
But I think my point wasn't that. I hear what you're saying there. That's too much of an obligation to put on your client. My point was, if he received one of these forms that was in fact pre-populated, then it's harder for him to claim that he didn't know the address, because those forms are indeed pre-populated with usually a return address as to where to send it. That was my point, not that he would inherit an obligation to do so somehow by getting on the website, which is user-friendly, but I don't think that that counts for due process purposes.
I agree that if he received a form that indicated the address of the court or that was pre-populated with that information, then he would have had the information he needed to fulfill his obligation. But there's no evidence in the record, there's no form in the record that indicates he was ever provided with a copy of the form or any evidence that he ever knew the immigration court location in this case.
But let's just suppose that he got a pre-populated EOIR 33 with the NTA. If he got one of those, then it really doesn't matter if which one of these NTAs, the one with the annotated or the unannotated, works, because he had under both potentially the form that could have updated his address and solved all these problems. So it strikes me that at one level the annotation's interesting, but all this is solved when he gets the EOIR pre-populated 33.
Is this part of the reason why you needed the A file?
Of course, Your Honor, and which is something that we didn't get when we filed the motion to reopen before the immigration judge. And we indicated that we needed an extension of time so that we could supplement that motion after receiving the FOIA results and getting the complete A file. Now, the immigration judge still denied the motion to reopen and wasn't moved by a request to just get more time so that we had access to the A file.
So your answer, I guess, to follow up on what Judge Phipps is saying, is if you had evidence in the record that this pre-populated form was available, your argument would be more difficult to make under the notice to appear, but you're telling us the record is silent on whether the EOIR 33 was ever given to him. Am I correct?
I wouldn't say that the record is silent. I think because there's no evidence of that in the record, because that pre-populated form does not exist, the evidence in the record doesn't support that he got that form.
Thank you.
If Judge he Sirica, did get a...
Judge Sirica, did you have a question?
No, but and can we assume that that the A file might reveal that information? Whether or not he had gotten the change of address form?
Your Honor, it's unclear from the record what exactly his A file contained, so I don't think it is safe to assume that the A file contained anything.
All right.
What's clear is that the documents that are available to us does not indicate in any way that petitioner had a pre-populated form or ever knew of the immigration court's address to be able to fulfill the obligation of sending that form.
And let me see if Judge Phipps has any other questions before we have you take a seat for your rebuttal. Judge Phipps?
No, thank you.
Judge Sirica?
No.
All right, counsel, we'll have you back on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Strokas.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Jessica Strokas on behalf of the United States Attorney General. Your Honors, petitioner has essentially admitted that he is not challenging the agency's decisions in this case, but nonetheless wants this court to rule in his favor. Understanding the procedural history of this case, what he raised and when, is absolutely critical. And when understood, it's plain that this court actually lacks jurisdiction over these notice arguments that the court has been discussing, and that the agency did not violate due process. So before the immigration judge, the petitioner filed a motion to reopen and rescind his removal order, alleging that he did not receive any copy of his notice to appear, and that therefore the immigration court lacked jurisdiction to issue the in absentia removal order.
Did the IJ say she lacked jurisdiction? She just denied it.
The immigration judge denied the, no, so I'm sorry, Your Honor. Petitioner alleged that the immigration judge lacked jurisdiction to issue the in absentia removal order. The immigration judge's decision on the motion to reopen was to outright deny it, saying, petitioner, you received personal service of the notice to appear, and that resolves this issue of the immigration court's jurisdiction.
Did the immigration judge have available to her both notices to appear and
Your Honor,
the EIOR 33? Did she have that in front of her?
Your Honor, it's unclear from the record.
Well, you know what was submitted, right? We know what kind of briefing was put together. And did the DOJ, the Attorney General, present both notices to her?
Your Honor, the NTA that was stamped as an exhibit is the one that has the annotation. And I will say it's unclear where the annotation came from. Honestly, to me, it looks like it could have been made by a court clerk. It could have been made by the immigration court itself. It doesn't necessarily, just because it's on the NTA, does not mean that it was necessarily made by the DHS. There doesn't have to be a nefarious.
Isn't that a problem though? Isn't that a problem for you? Because if it was put on by some court clerk, how do we know that this copy was the one that was sent to the petitioner? He contends it was the unannotated one.
Your Honor, ultimately, it doesn't really matter for the issue, the only issues before this court, which is that of the immigration judge's jurisdiction, because under NACOMA.
Let me just push back there. I mean, let's just say that, yeah, this NTA is good enough to give the immigration judge jurisdiction. Let's just say it's good, because you're going to tell me what NACOMA says, and you probably know it better than I know it. But either NTA, under your theory, will give the immigration court jurisdiction. That doesn't mean that the immigration court can exercise its jurisdiction in violation of due process.
Correct,
Your
Honor.
So what would happen is if the immigration court has jurisdiction, but the petitioner has no way of knowing where to send a notice or gets an EOIR 33 form, which seems to be a little bit strict in terms of what needs to be sent in terms of if that's how the process works best, if you use the form, then jurisdiction isn't the only issue. The issue is, yes, the IJ had jurisdiction, but yes, there might have been a due process problem with the notice that was provided to petitioner.
And Your Honor, that's absolutely correct. But if petitioner wanted to raise that kind of procedural due process issue, the appropriate venue would have been before the agency in the first instance. And he simply did not do that. He only raised to the immigration judge that he did not receive any copy of his NTA and that therefore the immigration court lacked jurisdiction. To the board, he argued, he changed tactics a bit. He said, okay, I did receive a copy of my NTA, but there was this, there's a second copy of the NTA and I never received a notice of hearing. So the board's decision doesn't disturb the ultimate denial of his motion to reopen, which again was only about, did he receive any copy of his notice to appear? And then the board addresses his jurisdictional arguments. There is no place in his agency filings where he argues a procedural due process issue based on notice. It's all about jurisdiction. So that's really the problem that petitioner has here at this court's level, is that this court's jurisdiction is limited by section 242 of the INA to what he presented before the agency and what the agency addressed. The appropriate.
If that were the case though, counsel, if all that petitioner argued before the IJ was jurisdiction, why go through the exercise of, by the way, I'd like the copy of the A file. I need a continuance to get more information about what led to this ultimate order. So I'm not sure you're reading it so strictly, you're ignoring kind of other things that also accompanied the request for relief on the motion to reopen, or should we just ignore that, that they were looking for evidence?
Your Honor, petitioners in his motion to reopen makes that request for leave to supplement his motion to reopen, essentially a request for a continuance after the fact, and asks for it, stating that he submitted his emergency motion upon information and belief that he did not receive proper notice of his hearing despite providing DHS with the correct address. So his entire motion is about he did not receive any copy of his notice to appear. That is what the immigration judge had to address, and what the immigration judge did was say you did. So there isn't necessarily a reason that the A file would come into play. And on appeal to the board addressed that exact issue. I believe it was on, let me see if I can find it, page 5 of the administrative record, the board's, page 3 of the board decision, when it's addressing the due process issue that petitioner raised about time for leave to supplement his motion. And the board said, you cannot show prejudice because your motion was about notice, was about receipt of your notice to appear. And furthermore, under, we've already decided under this two-step matter of Bermuda's CODA jurisdictional inquiry, we've already decided that notice was not required in this case.
So notice is not required at all?
For purposes of jurisdiction, Your Honor. For purposes of jurisdiction.
I don't think your adversary was limited in the presentation to the purported lack of jurisdiction, which we all agree was incorrect. The court had jurisdiction, and that there's been a constant theme from the motion to reopen. And when you look at all the supporting documents, it all had to do with due process. And I'm not sure that you're asking us to ignore that.
Your Honor, what I'm not asking you to ignore the due process issues. I do believe that there are due process issues that were preserved in this case and raised to the agency. That the question of leave to supplement the motion to reopen is certainly one of them. What I'm saying is that this court does not have jurisdiction to go into these notice issues, notwithstanding petitioner's attempt to reframe the notice issue as a due process issue. First,
Let's assume we do. How do you explain the choice between these two notices? What is the evidentiary basis to conclude that this petitioner received one that had an address on it and one and over the other that lacks it? What do we have,
Your Honor,
in front of us?
If we are hypothetically going into a world where petitioner did raise the notice issue, either as a straight legal issue or as a procedural due process issue before the agency, I can't speak to it as it is because he simply didn't raise it. But if we're talking about a hypothetical, certainly this court, the substantial evidence standard would govern that. And as Judge Phipps pointed out, it appears that the agency looked at the one that was marked as an exhibit, which is the one with the annotation. I cannot explain why there are two. I can give you my thoughts that it looks like a court clerk may have made the annotation, and that it doesn't necessarily mean that there's some nefarious purpose that DHS made it. Even if DHS made it, petitioner was originally detained in Texas, and it could have been a DHS clerk who said, well, he's going to New Jersey. Let's make sure that this goes to the New Jersey Immigration Court so that he doesn't have to go through the rigmarole of filing a motion to change venue from Texas.
What's the evidence that we know that he received this one as opposed to the other? The record doesn't seem to allow us to evaluate whether there's substantial evidence as to which one he received.
Your Honor, again, I speaking hypothetically, I'm not quite sure. And I think that in the record, the one that the agency relied on, it's the one that's marked as an exhibit, Exhibit 1. Now, that's only part of the inquiry.
I keep fixating on this EOIR 33. I mean, it strikes me that if you received an EOIR 33 with the NTA, mm-hmm. then we don't really have any issue here because he would have got that. He would have had the obligation to send that back in, especially if it was repopulated. But the issue, at least from a due process perspective, not from a jurisdiction perspective, is we don't have any evidence that he got that or when he got that. It creates kind of a strange situation of there might be a no man's land where an alien could change addresses before getting the EOIR 33 and claim never to have, you know, never to have got stuff.
But Your Honor is exactly correct. So speaking hypothetically, petitioner's rule here simply doesn't work because it would allow any non-citizen who's detained by the DHS to give an address and then just simply abandon that address or never have that address in the first place and then claim that he did not receive notice of his hearing because even though he received personal service of an NTA, that NTA could never be perfected with a notice of hearing. So essentially, and to quote this court's very recent decision in John Luis, the Attorney General from 2019, that held that in absentia proceedings are not violations of due process, it would perversely let him avoid removal by not attending his hearing. And he would have no consequences for not attending his hearing because he could simply move from his address.
Well,
now, I admit that is not.
He couldn't do that if the EOIR 33 was sent at the exact same time as the NTA because then his obligation to update would be immediate with his receipt of an NTA with or without date and time for hearing. So,
well, and Your Honor, the obligation to update is not tied, like petitioner argues, to the Immigration Court Practice Manual. It's statutory. It says in the statute that he must update his address immediately if he moves. There's not
an obligation. It says he must tell the Attorney General, if I recall the statute correctly, and we can find the Attorney General's address, but that's different than sending in to an immigration court because those are different addresses. There's one in Elizabeth, there's one in Newark. Mm-hmm. You might not know which one it would be. But if I recall the statute, it says Attorney General, not any specific court.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe section 239A1, F says must immediately provide the Attorney General with the change of address or phone number. So it's not tied to the Immigration Court Practice Manual. And using form EOIR 33 is just a means to an end because the immigration court is essentially part of the Attorney General, if that makes sense. The Attorney General's authority is designated to members of the Board of Immigration Appeals and to immigration judges to make decisions in his stead. So by sending that form, you are essentially satisfying section 239A1F. But again, Your Honors, the procedural history of this case really bears out that this discussion that we're having about notice in this case and about the procedural due process inquiry related to notice in this case was never raised before the agency. And I do think that this court will have to grapple with whether it has jurisdiction to address these arguments and these claims raised by the petitioner. Because again, petitioner really had two avenues to take. He could address notice and he could address jurisdiction. He decided to pursue jurisdiction without pursuing notice, and now he's only pursuing notice, which essentially leaves this court with nothing to review outside of those of three due process issues. His allegation that the decision was, ultimately the immigration judge's decision was too conclusory, the denial of leave to supplement, which the board addressed and said that he was not prejudiced because his initial motion to reopen was about whether or not he received a copy of his notice to appear, not an annotated copy, not an unannotated, any copy. And third, the unfortunate ad hominem attack on the board member who simply failed to rule in his favor. Those are the three due process issues that were arguably exhausted before the board and that this court would have jurisdiction to consider. But any other procedural due process issue, unfortunately for the petitioner in this case, it just simply was not raised to the agency.
Judge Sirica, do you have any further questions of counsel? Judge Phipps.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for your arguments. Okay. We'll hear counsel on rebuttal. How do you respond to your adversary's arguments of a lack of preservation of the issue concerning the notice?
Sure, Your Honor. The notice, we argue that the notice petitioner received was infirm, and his in absentia removal order should be rescinded for lack of notice. And those arguments were made both in the BIA appeal and the emergency to reopen before the immigration judge. We also argued before both courts that their reliance on insufficient evidence was a violation of petitioner's due process rights. And third,
you have record sites for this? I'd love to just see this. If you have those would be valuable to at least me.
I do have them, Your Honor. So first, the notice that petitioner received was infirm, and his in absentia removal order should be rescinded for lack of notice. That is in the BIA appeal of the immigration judge motion to reopen denial. In the brief there, we even say that to handwrite a critical piece of information in after service of the documents belies the concept of service. That is on AR000036. That argument continues as well on AR000047. Continuing to 000051. This was also raised, of course, in the EOIR 26 Notice of Appeal, and those page sites are 000275-76. In the emergency motion to reopen before the immigration judge, counsel noted her belief that petitioner did not receive proper notice, but emphasized that she didn't have access to the evidence necessary to flesh out this argument. And that's an important point, because here counsel didn't get petitioner's FOIA results until after the emergency motion to reopen. And of course she had those documents before she filed the appeal before the BIA. But the arguments she did make before the immigration judge are on 000395-96. 000401-402. The argument in terms of the evidence of non-receipt was also made before both courts. Would Your Honor like those sites as well?
I don't need those, but okay. If my colleagues would, then I don't need that. I don't want to stop you, but I leave it to them.
I'm fine. Thank you.
There are also record sites for our arguments that the immigration judge and the BIA's reliance on insufficient evidence was a violation of petitioner's due process rights. I can provide those sites if you'd like. If not, I would just conclude by saying that this is why a hearing is necessary in this case, is to answer the questions that you asked of both me and opposing counsel. Respondent conceded on page 4 of its brief that it's unclear from the record. That is a concession, Your Honor. It is unclear from the record whether the notice that petitioner received was the copy or the location of the court was to be determined or the Newark Immigration Court. And that's exactly why we need a hearing in this case. DHS is the only party that filed the annotated copy, and petitioner was the only one that filed the blank notice. So it actually is clear, Your Honor, who filed which copy.
Thank you. Judge Phipps, any further questions of counsel?
No, thank
you. Judge Sirica. No. Right, counsel, thank you very much for your helpful arguments and your briefing in this matter. The court will take the matter under advisement, and we hope you'll stay safe and healthy.